Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For more information, call 866-837-9027.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for Tuesday, January 31st, 2006. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. In agricultural news, President Bush gives his State of the Union address tonight, and renewable fuel supporters hope the president builds on the energy bill passed by the last Congress. Also, more quibbling between the EU and U.S. over the Doha round of world trade talks. And Japan's opposition party is meeting today with USDA officials and lawmakers over that January 20th illegal shipment of U.S. beef. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also, this half hour, we'll hear from a Cornell University professor about what he says are needed changes in the U.S. food aid system. It's all on the Tuesday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
Tuesday afternoon, prices settled like this. Kansas City March wheat, 397 and a half down three quarters. March wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade, 343 and a quarter down two. May, 354 and a half down one and a half. March corn, 218 and three quarters up one. May, 229 up one and a quarter. July, 238 up one and a half. December, 255 and three quarters up two. March soybeans, 594 and a quarter down four and a half. May, 606 and three quarters, down two and three quarters. July, 616 and a half, down three and three quarters. November, 629 and a half, down one and a quarter. March soybean meal, 185, down 320. March soybean oil, 2235, up 15. Over at the Merck, March feeder cattle, 109.82 and a half, up 7.5. February live cattle, 93.55, up 30. February lean hogs, 55.95, down 12.5 on the day. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Dave.
It looks like, based on what I can tell, the funds rolled a number of corn contracts today. And maybe the commercials were even on the other side of it. What can you tell us?
Well, you know, we know that the one index fund rolled in excess of 12,000 March to May corn. We know there's some other additional buying. We saw some traditional funds, plus some of the index funds still in there buying corn today. They seem to be somewhat absent in the bean pit, but being so prevalent in the corn pit, why it kept the bean market under control or from falling out of bed, Dave. So, you know, but then there was on the website of the Goldman Sachs index fund, its comment was, we were thinking of reallocating assets during the month of February and may roll some money out of corn and wheat into soybeans. They made a comment they wanted to add money to markets that are seeing higher global supply.
Very interesting from Goldman Sachs, I guess. Corn, as you say, propping up the beans today. Give us your technical analysis at the end of the day for corn and beans.
Well, I mean, as we look at things here today, I mean, basically a solid close over 255 in the Dease corn. Over, you know, that's a very positive move. We're looking for 257 and then up to 260 if we follow through on technical looks. You know, the March corn stayed below 220 again today. You know, 221 is the area that we need to break through to push the nearby corn out there. The beans, you know, we went down today, but we didn't break anything to the downside as far as any major moves that way. You know, in fact, we closed right up against the 630 in the November beans, just a half cent off there. So the wheat, you know, a little bit. The funds are definitely short the Chicago wheat, only down a cent and a half. And the wheat, as we look at things today, if they would actually come back in and cover some of that, some of this fund activity, the wheat could react. Generally, this time of year, a seasonal trade is being long corn, short wheat, as we see Argentina and Australia wheat starting to come on this time of year. And basically, the corn market, the U.S. is the place for corn this time of year. And, of course, our domestic business and feed generally keeps the corn market a little more stable that way. But if these funds would happen to come in and cover their shorts in the wheat, that could be a little bit negative to that spread.
Historically, February is generally speaking a month where futures turn to the south. Are you looking for that to happen this time around?
Well, if we see the index fund buying subside, that would probably happen, Dave. I was talking to a couple of very intelligent people on the phone, and we were joking about, I asked them if they knew, you know, how long this index buying would go on, and they laughed back at the phone at me, saying that if they knew, they wouldn't be bothered to be calling anybody like that. They'd be in charge and just trade one day and be very rich. But the fact of the matter is we've seemed to start a little bit of counter-seasonal trend here. We are keeping technically positive, and we have to be just probably a little bit more apprehensive of seasonal trends than usual at this point in time.
So are you wanting your producers that you're working with to be a little bit aggressive about maybe making some new crop sales?
I think basically we're going to give it a little. We've been aggressive, maybe a little too soon, but we're going to sit back, watch a little bit, and I think that you know, it might be time to use some options here along the way rather than just a straight futures contracts at this point in time.
What kind of option strategy do you like then?
Well, I think that you know, we're looking at the idea of buying some puts, maybe selling some out of the money calls, putting a fence on some of these prices. You know, maybe the 250 puts, $3 calls, $6 puts, $7 calls like that along the way. That could be done very economically at this point in time.
What's your analysis of what happened on the Merc today?
Lamerck, well, you know, we do a little easier there on the cattle. We popped back a little bit later in the day, saw a little strength, a little commercial buying come in there. The hogs continued to stay, you know, very calm, but the slaughter numbers are up pretty good. It doesn't look like cash cattle are going to trade till probably about Thursday, because there's still quite a spread difference between the bids and the offers there, Dave.
In the hogs, are they beginning to find a bottom in futures?
I think it's going to take, you know, a couple more days trading here to see if, you know, if we can hold here. You know, we've taken quite a bit off the cattle here in the last week. We're going to have to sort of see if it does stabilize here. But the jury's still out a little bit in my camp here as to decide whether we bottom for a while yet or not.
Anything in outside markets catching your eye today?
Well, yeah, there you go. Locally here, we saw... gas up about another 15 cents overnight again at the gas station. And yet, as we look at the board today, gas is down 6.5 cents. We're wondering, Exxon posts record earnings for any company ever, and we raise gas on a down day on the board. So a little bit of confusion there is how that's going along. But, interest rates, of course, being raised 0.25% again today at the meeting.
Thank you very much, Wayne.
Thank you, David.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He is in Newmarket, Indiana. At the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, will be joining us for a look at agricultural weather, taking a look at AM 580's Mike Solis forecasts for Illinois and Indiana tonight. Partly to mostly cloudy. Lows ranging from 28 in eastern Indiana to 40 in southwestern Illinois. Then tomorrow in the north, mostly cloudy with scattered showers of rain or mixed rain and snow. Elsewhere, partly sunny, with highs ranging from 42 in far northern Illinois to 56 degrees in the far south. In agricultural news, President Bush likely will focus on a few agricultural issues tonight in his annual State of the Union address, including energy supply and renewable fuels, immigration reform, the Doha round of trade negotiations, and the need for making his tax cut measures permanent. Renewable Fuels Association President Bob Dineen says it's hard to overestimate the importance of the State of the Union speech in setting the national agenda.
By talking about renewable fuels and energy again this year, he will be helping to set the agenda for this Congress. He signed an energy bill last August. Clearly, he's indicating that the work is not yet done, and we can do more. And I would agree with that. And I think the direction that he's going in terms of, okay, we've got a renewable energy industry started. We need to take it to the next step. We need to get beyond just producing ethanol from grain is indeed the way to go.
And Dineen says President Bush may offer several different ethanol proposals.
I believe what is going to be talked about tonight is research and development on cellulosic ethanol technology, perhaps providing a bit more money for that effort. I think that he'll look at other incentives, although they're unspecified at this point, to try to get more renewable fuel use, more flexible fuel vehicles on the road.
After listening to the president's address tonight, the Senate will consider tomorrow the nomination of Ben Bernanke for chairman of the Federal Reserve Board. Attention is already turning to the FY 2007 budget. Last week, the Congressional Budget Office released its January 2006 baseline. That's a set of agricultural estimates that will be used to benchmark the president's 2007 budget and to estimate future costs of bills under consideration. The CBO's new baseline shows corn marketing loan rates at $1.95 per bushel through 2016, while usage for corn is expected to grow from 10.9 billion bushels in 2005 to nearly 12.9 billion bushels in 2016. The CBO says a key driver is biofuel usage, which it says will grow to just under 3 billion bushels of corn by 2016. The U.S. and European Union continue to quibble over the shape of a new world free trade deal. Speaking during closing remarks at the World Economic Forum in Switzerland, U.S. Trade Representative Rob Portman said any new global trade deal must cut ag tariffs to the bone to be politically viable to lawmakers.
To be honest with you, the very dramatic proposal we've put forward on reducing subsidies, this is the trade-distorting support that's part of the Doha round, recall. It's not just about reducing tariffs, it's also getting at trade-distorting support. In order to hold that in the United States, it is only fair to our farmers and only politically feasible if we can also show that there will be additional market access. We have relatively low tariffs in the United States compared to other countries in agriculture. The global average, by the way, is 62%. 62% is the average agricultural tariff, more than twice that of the manufacturing tariff.
But European Union Trade Commissioner Peter Mandelson argued that the U.S. proposal would, in his words, strip Europe naked of its agricultural tariffs and subsidies. He insisted Europe must transition slowly to reductions in domestic support and lower ag tariffs. And Mandelson said it would be impossible to reduce ag tariffs to the level of tariffs on manufactured goods in the current round of trade talks.
It took 40 years and successive trade rounds to bring the developed countries' industrial tariffs down to the level that they are now. We can't do, in the case of agriculture, in one round, what it took 40 years to do in the case of industrial tariffs.
And Brazil's foreign minister, Celso Amorim, said the differences are so great between the U.S. and EU that only heads of state can now solve the problem.
Making progress in agriculture, as it was universally said by everybody that sat in Hong Kong, from Ghana to Brazil, from Senegal, who is here, to Nigeria or to Argentina, agriculture is central. It's not the sole subject, but it's not the only subject, but it's central. And I think there's still a gap that goes beyond the powers of Mr. Mandelson or my own power. So I think that's why that kind of meeting will be needed at some point.
Brazilian officials proposed a heads of state agricultural summit for late February or early March. South Dakota Senator John Thune says Brazilian officials are saying their interest in exporting ethanol to the U.S. has diminished. Thune made his comments after a trade mission to Brazil. He says Brazilian officials seem content to use ethanol domestically and to export to other countries than the U.S. And a delegation of Japanese Diet members are in the U.S. on a fact-finding mission to look into the U.S. beef industry just a little more than a week after Japan halted imports. The delegation, members of the Opposition Democratic Party of Japan, or DPJ, was in Kansas on Monday and is meeting today with U.S. officials. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Chris Barrett is with the Department of Agriculture, Resource, and Managerial Economics at Cornell University in New York. His new book is called Food Aid After 50 Years, Recasting Its Role. Barrett examines the basics of food aid, the U.S. food aid system, and food aid management around the world. Barrett looks at the food aid sector with an eye toward how it might need to be changed. Todd Gleason recently interviewed Barrett, first asking him to give an overview of his work.
Well, the book that we wrote is on food aid globally. It's not just the U.S. programs, but the United States accounts for 60% of global food aid. So effectively, we need to focus on the U.S. And the fundamental change that happened in the system is we went from an old arrangement where the government provided price supports for farmers and collected large surpluses, primarily of grain, but also non-fat dry milk powder and such, as a result of being the buyer of last resort, and then would ship those surpluses overseas outside of the commercial market as food aid. But as those price support programs unwound, the government maintained food aid programs that were still run essentially in the same way as they had been when it was based off of government surpluses. So now the government goes out and issues an invitation for bids. And so large agribusinesses offer to supply commodity, shipping lines offer to supply the freight services, and the government then purchases these commodities and freight services to ship abroad. And the result of that is supposed to be humanitarian assistance. But the problem is when you no longer hold the grain in a stockpile someplace and ship it away immediately when you get a need, but instead you go through an elaborate procurement process, that the delays become quite great. And as a result, we're seeing that the average time from the request for food aid to port delivery is 5 months now for emergency shipments. And that's just too long to wait. So there's a big human cost to this in terms of time spent waiting when people are really in desperate straits already. Plus, there's a very big expense involved in shipping. 40 to 60% of the U.S. food aid budget goes to freight and administrative expenses now. The actual cost of the food is increasingly a less than half of the program. So we've got a system right now that's spending a lot of money on the things that aren't actually helping hungry people around the world, and the response is relatively slow so that we're not helping people when they really need help. So that part can be improved. The system does help people, but it can be improved. There's a lot of room for improvement. The other side of this is that many people still believe that the food aid system is helping farmers because it used to be a part of a system that did help farmers because of price supports. But the food aid procurement system really doesn't benefit farmers. That's an important myth that pervades all the discussions in Washington. You think about this in basic terms. The value of the commodities purchased by U.S. food aid programs is about $500 million in an almost $1 trillion food economy in the United States. I mean, that's a drop in the ocean. So the analogy I like to use is I have five kids and live in a small rural town. If you believe that when my wife and I show up to buy groceries, the grocer increases the prices, then you can also believe that when the U.S. goes in to buy food aid, U.S. prices for farm products goes up, because the economic impact of my family's purchases in our town is actually greater than the impact of U.S. government purchases for food aid on the U.S. food economy. You plainly don't believe the grocer marks up the prices to us, so why would you believe prices go up for farmers from food aid? It just doesn't happen. So we have this myth that the U.S. farmer is benefiting directly from food aid programs. That myth is exploited by the small group of organizations that really do profit from food aid programs, especially the shippers. Again, almost half of the food aid budget goes to freight costs, and a small degree, some of the larger agribusiness concerns that sell into the system. And they too make money in part because of the shipping restrictions. There's an obscure bit of law called the Cargo Preference Act that came in alongside the food aid legislation 50 years ago in the summer of 1954. And cargo preference requires that 75% of U.S. food aid shipments go on U.S. flagged carriers. There are only 13 such lines registered to provide these services to the United States government, and they make on average 60 to 80% more than the open market cost of the same service provided by a non-U.S. flag carrier who could carry grain from New Orleans to Mombasa just as easily. And so that process not only generates big profits for the small number of shipping lines involved, but because we have this restriction, the government has to match commodity offers with freight offers, and you often can't get freight offers in the place the commodity is available for the lowest cost. So you often have to overpay for the commodity as well. And some of the larger agribusiness concerns are taking advantage of this process. They're very clever, and they make on average about 8%, 10% more than the open market price for the same commodity at the same place and time, largely because of the distortions in this bidding system. In my experience, U.S. farmers care about food aid not because they're foolish enough to think that they make money off of it, but because they care deeply about food and they care about people, and they don't like the idea that there are hungry people in the world. But American farmers are also incredibly efficient, and the idea of the waste in this system and the unnecessary delays in this system, I find when explained to farmers, offends them. And they want to see these sorts of reforms. They want to see a system that works in meeting the basic needs for hungry people around the world. And as soon as they understand how it really works, that they're not getting economic benefits out of this, and that the restrictions we've got restrict the ability of the system to meet the needs of the hungry, they want to see this thing cleaned up, just like Canadian farmers have.
And how is it that you suggest they do that?
Well, the Bush administration last year proposed a simple refinement that we take one quarter, only one quarter of the U.S. emergency food aid budget, and rather than requiring procurement of commodity and shipping services in the United States, that where appropriate, the U.S. government's authorized to buy food closer to where you need to distribute it. Because it's often the case that there's a surplus right next door to a place where you've got a food emergency. So last summer, there was a crisis in West Africa. People saw images of dying kids in Niger. But right next door, there were food surpluses. But the U.S. government was restricted from being able to buy food locally and just move it right in. So we had to pay a lot more and wait a lot longer to be able to attend to the pressing needs simply because of this restriction. The Bush administration proposed relaxing that, and the Congress refused to go along with it. It's likely that it will be proposed again week after next, when the next fiscal Euro 7 budget is proposed. And it will be interesting to see how that debate unfolds in the Congress. That's one reform. A second reform is to roll back the Cargo Preference Act, to stop spending so much money on freight costs and driving up also the procurement costs for the grain and the milk powder we ship abroad by relaxing this restriction that 75% of it has to go to U.S. flag carriers. We have a Department of Defense program to support the merchant marine. We don't need to be piggybacking expenses on food aid for that as well. The hungry shouldn't be paying for maintaining a merchant marine force for us.
Thanks for joining us, Chris. Chris Barrett of Cornell University. He authored a book along with Daniel Maxwell called Food Aid After 50 Years, Recasting Its Role. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at lincolnlandagrienergy.com.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. The University of Illinois has filed another appeal with the NCAA in the Chief Alanowicz controversy. Today's action expands a previous appeal of an NCAA decision that would require the U of I to drop the Chief mascot and logo before it could host any postseason athletic competition. An NCAA spokesman says a review committee will examine the appeal for new information that might affect their original decision. The head of Chicago Mercantile Exchange Holdings says the company may expand into energy trading in what could be a direct challenge to exchanges in New York and London. CME operates its namesake exchange for commodities, stock index, and foreign exchange futures. Chief Executive Craig Donohue mentioned the energy trading contracts to analysts today, but declined to give specifics of its plans. The New York Mercantile Exchange and the ICE Futures Exchange in London currently dominate the energy trading market. Indiana prison officials are planning a statewide summit in March aimed at preventing inmate suicides. In the past month, three inmates in Indiana have taken their lives at state prisons. State officials will hold a summit March 1st to look at ways to prevent such deaths. Hundreds of union workers and others rallied today at the Indiana State House in Indianapolis to support Governor Mitch Daniels' highway plan. Tom Perez of Whiting was there with Carpenters Local 599. He says Daniels' plan would be good for working people in Indiana because it will create jobs. Archer Daniels Midland Company's shares are getting a boost today after ADM reported a 17% increase in second quarter earnings. The Decatur-based agricultural processor reported operating profit gains in each of its core processing units, and profits nearly doubled in its corn processing business. ADM shares jumped 11% to a new 52-week high in early trading on the New York Stock Exchange. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon, Don.
Good afternoon.
Question about Brazil. For the most part, they're in pretty good shape.
They are. They are still looking at some good chances of moisture. Moisture is really not an issue right now. The only thing that may be an issue in Brazil is that it's been a bit cooler than normal this summer down there, and the trend forecast-wise over the next 5 to 10 days is for many areas of Brazil to not be a lot below normal, but just a little below normal. And if this trend continues as we get to the end of the growing season, that may be a factor as some heat unit accumulation in some areas of Brazil may be behind a bit. But really, that's all we can see in terms of any negative right now.
Folks at the Chicago Board of Trade keeping a close eye on Argentina and wondering if timely rains this week will make this crop or not. What are your thoughts?
Well, there definitely is a better chance of rain in Argentina. Is it going to get all the key growing areas? It may not have 100% coverage. It may be a little bit spottier than that, but rain is looking like a good possibility. And the opposite of Brazil, temperatures in Argentina are going to be a little bit above normal. That's exacerbated the dryness a little bit. But there will be some beneficial rains. Not sure it's going to get everybody, though.
Most significant rains in what, Buenos Aires, La Pampa?
And areas north and northwest of there.
What about in China? I see it's been cold there. Any chance of winter kill on the wheat crop?
I don't think so. At least the severe cold, the real damaging cold, has stayed for the most part to the north of there. Many areas of Asia are going to be a little bit warmer over the next week or so. But on the other side of the globe, where temperatures have been well below normal and severely cold, that trend's going to continue. Most of Central and Eastern Europe and portions of at least Western Asia will still be very chilly through at least another week or two.
You talk about warmer than usual temperatures. That's certainly been the case in the U.S. Midwest this winter. You look for that to continue over the next week?
No. In fact, what's left of this week, yes. Next week, different story. We're going to see some changes in the jet stream pattern across North America that will send some colder Canadian air into the Midwest and Corn Belt and all areas east of the Rockies starting late this weekend and especially into early next week. We're going to find the first couple of weeks of February probably a lot colder than what we had in January. Do we see severe cold? No, but the trend is going to be colder.
Snow with that occurrence? Or
some,
no?
But nothing right now that looks big. If we're going to have any big snows, it'll probably be along the eastern seaboard.
A lot of talk about the U.S. hard red winter wheat area continuing to be dry. Any relief in sight?
Not much. While some of this colder air will drag in some cold fronts that may produce some light snows in those areas next week, not the big wet storm that they need right now.
And areas that you're keeping an eye on?
Well, if we were to look somewhere else in southern hemisphere areas, we see good chance of precipitation in South Africa, Australia, which has had some good moisture lately, going to be a little bit drier.
Thanks much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Don joins us every Tuesday afternoon here on AM 580. And that's today's closing market report. Be sure to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 Central Time for our first in-depth look at the day's markets. And you can listen to today's futures analysis and weather reports on the World Wide Web. Go to WILL.UIUC.edu, click on AM on the left-hand side of the page, and Agriculture on the right. This is Dave Dickey. Have a great afternoon.